all remember 7 years ago exactly where we were around 8:30 in the morning on September 11th when the first of the two towers of the World Trade Center was hit. Of course, that date was marked Thursday this week, and one of the conversations was about the health of the people who inhaled the dust and debris, toxic material that permeated the air. Well, Dr. Michael Iannuzzi is the new chair of medicine at SUNY Upstate, and he was at Mount Sinai in New York City before coming here. He's a pulmonologist, and he's in the studio this morning to tell us about his experiences and those long-term ramifications. Good morning, Dr. Iannuzzi.
Good morning.
Welcome to Central New York. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Tell us, you dealt with patients, people who were at Ground Zero?
Yes, the rescue workers and the residents as well of that area.
What kinds of things did you find early on? I know you said you were right there, within days of the World Trade Center being hit. Tell us about your experience.
The air, we really remained of poor quality in the first few weeks afterwards. So I think there was an underestimation of just how much air pollution there was in the first few weeks. The rescue workers, the volunteers, and the residents certainly had more acute exposure at the time of the plume of debris from the collapse of the towers.
You know, I remember thinking back to the pictures, and of course they've been replayed over and over and over again, and it just seems to me like those of us who don't live in New York City, we had trouble distinguishing between what we think of as being the normal, quote-unquote, air quality in New York City in the photos we see versus how that might have changed through 9/11. So talk to us maybe about the differences between what a normal New York City person would be inhaling versus what changed.
Well, there's always some particulate matter in what we call fine particulate matter in the air in polluted cities. And these are measured and were monitored in New York City as a matter of routine. And immediately after and for the weeks that followed, there were much greater elevation of these particulates.
And what was different in them?
When the towers collapsed, there was a great deal of silica and pulverized concrete. These larger particles had a very high pH, alkaline pH. In addition, there was some asbestos. About 5,000 tons of asbestos existed in the North Tower before they stopped using asbestos to insulate, as well as over the next 30 years, some of the asbestos was taken out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest exposure were to these large and small particulates that occurred from the building collapse. And then there were, in addition, volatile organic compounds. Chemicals released from the burning and the fires did go on all the way up until December.
Yes. And it wasn't just buildings that were burning and so forth. It was bodies. It was people, too. That kind of, the smells and all of that, I can only imagine, must have been just horrific.
It was definitely bad.
What kinds of problems did you see, you know, breathing problems and probably coughing and hacking and so forth early on, and how did that change over time?
Initially, the firemen and the rescue workers were the ones with the greatest exposure, and they developed what's come to be known as World Trade Center cough, which by definition was a persistent enough cough and severe enough cough that the firemen had to be off of work at least 4 weeks.
Wow.
And initially there was a less than 4% of the firemen rescue workers afflicted with World Trade Center cough. But then over the next year or so, it shot up to about 13% of all the firemen who were exposed developing this World Trade Center cough. In addition to the World Trade Center cough, there were more severe esophageal reflux symptoms, heartburn, and chronic sinusitis and rhinitis. And that came from the larger particles, which had this high pH and were very irritating.
So now, 7 years later, What kinds of changes have you seen? Have these things healed and gone away? Have they been cured, or are they having long-term ramifications from it?
A percentage of these patients with World Trade Center cough, about a quarter, have what we call persistent reactive airways disease, where their airways tighten up like asthma and exposure to irritants. The residents in the area, the ones who are not directly at the ground zero.
They were in their apartments, right, or in their office buildings.
Some of those as well, some of those people have had some of this hyperreactive airways. They don't have, by definition, they do not have World Trade Center cough, because it really required that more intense exposure, enough to cause you to have to leave work for a period of time. But many of them also have this hyperreactive airways.
We don't
know how long those are going to last. There's been a small percentage of patients who've developed other lung problems, what we call immunologically mediated lung diseases. We're not entirely sure if in all cases it's directly related to World Trade Center exposure, or it's become a disease that just becomes detected because they're being followed more closely.
Right. Well, it would be interesting to be following these people over the next few years. We hope you'll come back, and maybe as we look at these anniversaries each year, what's hopefully going to happen is they're not going to be forever diseases, that they will be able to get rid of them. Do you hope that that will happen, or do you expect that will happen?
I think that as time goes on over the next decades or so, we'll learn about some permanent lung diseases, but hopefully the vast majority will resolve.
Very good. Well, Dr. Michael Iannuzzi, thank you so much for coming by. We're glad you're here in Central New York.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. The Early Warning Tree, or Exercise Secrets of Famous Scientists. The other day, I'm tootling home from work on my bike, and I look up and, yoikes, a red tree. My brain insists, trees are green, that tree is sick. Then it hits, fall, winter, coldness, snowiness, darkness, icy roads. How are you exercising the next 6 months, Dr. Lance Armstrong Jr.? My impulse was to head toward the TV chair and hibernate. Luckily, my highly trained scientific mind rescued me with Newton's law of gravitational thermodynamics. A butt in the TV chair tends to stay in the TV chair, so don't let the butt near the chair. Ah, Newton. And doubly luckily, I remembered the checkup from the neck up winter exercise principle of 7 P's. More obstacles between us and our goals means plan, P number one, prepare, two, proceed, three, to remove obstacles, to keep moving the tushy, and the aerobically proper, four, protocol five, thus staying fit and healthy, six and seven. All right, fit and healthy, five. And then I researched other exercise secrets of famous scientists. Turns out, to fit exercise into short winter workdays, Newton combined research on gravity with overcoming inertia on his lunch hour. He'd climb a tree, drop an apple on someone's head, jump down, and move horizontally quickly. And there's Einstein's E equals mc squared formula of nuclear physicals. He, of course, exercised mainly by combing his hair. But bet you didn't know that despite the explosive do, he was quite the ladies' man and had a fling with Marie Curie, radioactivity woman, who, believe it or not, he called my little hot stuff. Anyway, when Einstein tired of trying to figure out what E equals mc squared stood for, he went for a workout and had an aha moment. He realized it stood for exercise equals Marie Curie. What squared meant for these two connubial colleagues is still debated, but experts agree the possibilities are infinite. Subsequent research on Einstein's exercise insight revealed two major findings that can keep us doing the do with another easy-to-remember scientific acronym, DSF, WSY, LAY, KDI, or do something fun with someone you like and you'll keep doing it. For me, this will mean employing elementary gravitational forces to propel me and my wife at exponentially increasing velocities past the dormant trees, down inclined planes of white particulate matter, hoping later she's inexorably drawn to me in the ski lodge and whispers, "Richie, my own quarky, strange attractor." I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.